Hey, this is Tim Hunzi, partner of Parallel Music Publishing and board member of the Nashville Association of Independent Music Publishers. Thanks for listening to the Nashville Pubcast. This episode of the Nashville Pubcast, we have Allison Jones, Senior VP of A&R at Big Machine Label Group. Allison and I discuss A&R. To be honest, there's just too much to put in this intro. So stop, stay, listen, and learn. So let's start with a simple, basic thing. I think a lot of people out there that don't really understand Nashville kind of question what A&R really is. And I bet most half the people don't even know what it stands for anymore.
Well, I believe it's Artist and Repertoire.
Correct.
Did I say it right?
Okay. Yeah.
When I go home and hang out with my civilian friends, we've all seen like movies that talk. What's the Katherine Heigl movie where her husband does A&R? And
I can't remember.
Anyway, so there's in all the movies they glamorize it, like the person with the expense account that's supposed to go travel and hear bands, and all we do is drink and hang out at bars and hear music. That might have been the case years ago, but you and I have known each other 20.
Yeah. I think we came at the tail end of the golden age of that part.
I've done this 28 years, and I met you like 2 years into it.
Yeah, same. I'm like 26 in, I think. So yeah, that'd be about right.
So maybe the golden era was that, but you and I know it as my job is to find artist talent. If they don't write the music they sing or perform, I go find it from songwriters. Then there's the very glamorous part of my job, overseeing the recording budget and telling artists that they can or cannot spend X amount of dollars to make their music. And the ever so glamorous job of the deadline keeper. So if you sign an artist and they're making the record, there's always the deadline, which is hard to enforce with creative people. So that falls under the A&R department's job too. So basically, from beginning to end, it starts with finding a hit artist, helping them make their record, finding hit songs, keeping it on budget, keeping it on the timeline, and then making sure it gets delivered in time for the release date. And in the middle of all that, there's also a lot of babysitting and cheerleading, and I call myself a creative cheerleader.
That's a great title, yes, and that fits you very well.
Yeah, I mean, and I think people ask, how do you know if you're good at your job? And I think anyone that loves music is good at A&R, and then there's the unique ability to know which publishers — you have this job even more than I do, probably — knowing how to inspire a creative person, motivate them, kind of nurture them. Like, that word nurture seems weird, but there's a lot of nurturing. There's a lot of down days with creative people. So, you know, there is the glamorous part of going to find a hit artist and great songs, but then there's anything that you have to do to make sure the artist delivers the best product and hit songs.
That's a pretty damn good description as a whole, I would say. And I think you covered a lot of bases really quick. And I think you nailed it. I think one of the important things for what we both do, because sometimes people call me A&R, I just call it creative. We work in creative positions. And the key is having a gut instinct and a nurturing instinct. Anybody ask me what a key thing is, you have to have a lot of patience and really I call it a servant heart, because they require a lot, and there's a reason for that, because they're gifted and they have something we don't, and they don't usually look at life the same way we do. So like you said, it's a lot of roller coasters, and you don't really handle that. You kind of even glance over the fact that you're not just dealing with artists. You have managers and agents and bosses and other people and publishers wearing you out. Is my song still on hold, or is it not? I mean, just because I always think it's a fun question to ask every A&R person I know in today's environment, like, what's your average email inbox take in a day?
Well, I've been told I win for the most emails at Big Machine. So I'm a winner at something. And until we recently got a new email system, I was always in the red. So I was always like, every time I'd see the IT department, I would run. Because I mean, I I think, you know, I've been told I get as few as 200 a day, sometimes 500 emails a day.
That sounds about right.
Now, not all of those require urgent attention. So people ask me my biggest struggle and obstacle. Mine is email management. And so I listen to, obviously, my boss first, emails from my boss, emails from artists. But then songs. My favorite part of my job is listening to songs. Favorite part. I wish I could dedicate my whole day to listening to songs, but unfortunately, there's meetings, there's marketing meetings. Because also, I think a really good A&R person follows the life of a project through. So I help, you know, my job isn't completely done when the record's finished. You know, I want to help carry it through. Like, I just helped Thomas Rhett get an Old Navy commercial with one of his songs. And I was just pitching a Florida Georgia Line song to a National Ram truck commercial. And then I'm also was helping strategize like a Grammy campaign and showcases for TV and film. So my job never really, it's not only just about listening to songs, but when people ask about emails and songs, those are my two biggest challenges: how to return all my emails and how to listen to all the songs that come my way.
Advice for young up-and-coming artists and young publishing companies or other, you know, indie publishing companies or developing artists to help get their artists to a place that's the best to present to you or what you're looking for in new talent. And I know musically it's always when you hear it in your gut, but, you know, just some of the basic things that help trigger some things for you guys as a label.
I think in any form of entertainment, you have to find what makes you unique and special. So whatever it is, whether it's a TV show or a book or an artist or a song, you have to make people compelled and interested. So, you know, there's a couple of ways about going about it. You and I both have probably discovered people online because they released something, the Spotify numbers increased, or they were on YouTube and then the YouTube numbers started jumping, or they were on Instagram and something was compelling enough that made everybody want them to go like them or, you know, be a follower. So when I'm looking at something, regardless of what form of entertainment it's in, if people are running towards it, there's something there. So I think you have to find a way to make yourself unique and to make people want more of it. And then on the music side, I think you have to be true to, we've met with tons of people that, and we've worked with people that might have an amazing voice and they might be good looking. But if they don't know who they are yet and they're not true to their talent, it's very transparent. So I think with you know, there's a couple of things you look for. You know, and then there's always just that star sizzle. And you can't tell someone how to have that.
One of the questions that usually comes up is how to get to, you know, people ask me a lot, how do I get to you? How do I get my music to you? So obviously they can find your email address online and email you. If somebody's just cold, as you just explained, you get a ton of emails. Is there a better or lesser way to approach A&R with music that might give you the best chance to get listened to?
So that's a really tough one, because when you and I started, that was an intern's job to open all of the packages that had cassettes in them. And unfortunately, there have been a lot of nuisance and legitimate lawsuits from people who have sent me, I guess, you know, sent music. You know, like, sent music.
You have access.
Yeah. And so for that unfortunate reason, labels and publishing companies have to be really careful what they listen to. So we have a corporate rule that we can only listen to music that comes to us from people like yourself or from an attorney or a manager or someone we know, and preferably it be published. And if it's not published, I will ask, if someone says, I want to send you my music, and if they aren't published and it's not coming through someone, then I recommend that they put it out on a social media platform, because that way it's out there for everyone to consume.
Oh, that's a great.
Yeah. So, okay. Like, if it's out there for everyone to consume, it's nobody can come back and say, I sent you my song and then you gave it to someone else, you know. So,
so that's a good valid point that I had not thought of, that if you are a young writer, even if you don't sing, but you have demos, it's to start a social, like a SoundCloud link, mm-hmm. to, so that you have music out there. And then you never know who's going to tag into it as well as the popularity grows, as we spoke right. about. But that's a good thing for you. I didn't ever thought about that. That's fantastic advice. Great things that you've seen people do that they really should not do, which is some basic tips of whether it's how they should approach a label when they're trying to pitch an artist, or how they're trying to get to you about a song. There's probably some obvious things of, like, if you ever think about doing this, don't do that. Don't do that.
Gosh, I never want to break anyone's spirit. So I hate this, but while it's an awesome gesture to send gifts, it comes off as kind of weird.
Unless they know you.
Unless they know me. Yeah. No. Yeah. But I meant, like, I get it. Like, that, and we remember it. Like, there's this one female artist that always sends very elaborate but weird gifts. And we know who she is, but it's not going to make us like her music anymore. And in the beginning, we laughed at all the gifts. Or at the beginning, we were like, oh, that's really sweet, but I feel bad because I don't like her music. And then it gets kind of weird. So I don't think if you have a fun tchotchke that goes along with your package, yes.
Like a marketing tie-in.
Yeah.
Something simple.
Yeah, but you would be really, do you not get a lot of weird packages?
You know, not on my level as much, on occasion, but it's always been the A&R side. I remember that one time somebody was sending like cases of peaches or something, or oranges to all the labels with the music
in
it. Yeah,
or like baked goods, because I'm really weird about baked goods in general. Like. Yeah. I don't.
But food's probably a bad idea because we're all weird about food anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, so there's that. Also, I think there's that subtle art of get along, go along. You know, like you can't teach someone how to be cool and subtle, but you know, like
it's a fine line between being a pest and being persistent.
Yeah, and
you know?
I think if you, first of all, it's almost impossible, I think, in our genre to break into our industry without coming here. I know in pop and other formats, you can be discovered online and they'll sign you and they meet you one time. I truly believe if you want to do what you and I have been doing this long with the artists we work with, you have to come to town.
100%.
And I think you have to find that subtle art of how to network and meet the right people and meet someone like you, or meet an attorney, or meet a manager, or meet a songwriter. That's my biggest piece of advice, is find someone that's going to be your champion, that's going to help develop you. And develop can mean not necessarily writing with you. It can be like giving you advice, telling you the right way to go about it.
Or being the person that hears something and says, oh, I can send that to Allison
exactly.
for you and open that door.
And that's so hard. But the people who are superstars figure out how to do it. You know, like that's so hard. And you can't, once again, you can't tell someone how to do that. They just have to figure it out on their own. I mean, the other thing too, though, is this is like what to do. But whatever you put out there, make it compelling enough. Like when you send someone a link of your music, make sure it's going to stand out and be unusual.
That's a beautiful philosophy. Well, okay, we get to I like to do this crystal ball thing. You remember David Ross always had us staring at my crystal ball? Yeah. Well, this is where we're going. If you're looking into the crystal ball, where do you see, whether it's a musical trend or a business trend, do you see any transitions or anything that excites you coming down the road? Changes?
Well, I never follow trends, because anytime you think you're going to follow a trend, something comes along that wasn't the trend. And I don't think it usually works when artists try to imitate or mimic a trend. So, especially right now, I think it'd be hard to follow a trend, because at least on my roster, the most played song of the year was BB REXA and Florida Georgia Line. But one of our biggest breakthroughs at our label was a retro traditional country band, Midland.
Yeah.
So there's no trend. Yeah. There's no trend there.
Very broad.
So I think if there is a trend right now, like I said, with all the streaming platforms, If we can figure out how to make sure everyone's monetized properly, I think it's going to open up a whole new sea. And like I said, I think genre bending is going to ultimately be way more profitable to all of us, because old catalog can be discovered. Artists can put out more content. And I think with all these playlistings, artists can have more fun. You can put Florida Georgia Line can have a really, really country song they put on a country playlist, and they can still go do their pop collaborations that can be worldwide hits on many genres. So if anything, I think the digital era, hopefully, if it's monetized the right way, and I feel like we're going that direction, it's going to broaden the playing field for all of us.
Thanks for listening to the Nashville AIMP Pubcast. For more information, check out AIMP.org or follow us at Nashville AIMP on Instagram. The Nashville AIMP would like to give a shout out to our sponsors, Jamber and Sound Exchange. Jamber wants to know if you're looking for an easier way to capture song splits at the point of creation and organizing your catalog. Jamber is our podcast sponsor, and they are offering listeners a first look at their songwriter and publisher apps that allow songwriters to collaborate when inspiration strikes. Go to jamber.com/AIMP to sign up today. Sound Exchange develops business solutions for the entire music industry. They collect and distribute royalties on behalf of more than 155,000 recording artists, master right owners, and music publishers. Sound Exchange have paid out more than $5 billion in royalties. SX Works serves the licensing administration needs of music publishers around the world and operates CMRRA, which represents music publishers and administers mechanical rights for the majority of songs recorded, sold, and broadcast in Canada. We appreciate you listening to the Nashville Pubcast. Stay tuned for an all-new episode next week.